The Adventures of Indiana Jim, number 32, for October 8th, 2009.
And now, coming to you not exactly live from
the Cliffs of Insanity,
a man who needs no introduction, that international man of geekery, that intrepid arch-geekologist, Indiana Jim.
Don't tell me you've never heard of me.
I'll explain, and I'll use small words so that you'll be sure to understand, you warthog-faced buffoon.
Have you ever heard of Plato, Aristotle, Socrates?
Yes.
Morons.
You, boy, are arrogant, hot-tempered, and entirely too bold.
I like that. Reminds me of me.
I don't believe I've ever seen such a display of courage, skill, nerve, grace. Stupidity.
It's a sad fracking day when I'm the guy with the most testosterone in the room.
I have entertained in all the courts of Europe and speak a ready wit in their every tongue.
I told you I was famous.
Indiana Jim, Indiana Jim, this is London calling. Come in, please.
Well, hello all my little arch geeklings. It is I, Indiana Jim. It's fall and it puts me in a good mood because I love the crisp, cool temperatures, the blue skies, the stiff winds at my back, and my hair. No. Hey, how the heck's it going? I do love autumn when the colors begin to change, and it feels like good riding weather. You know, in the summer it's hot and sticky and just and I'm out of sorts, but the fall weather invigorates me, and it helps that it's football season, which always puts me in a good mood. The 49ers fan cast, my other podcast, is doing well. So thank you to you people who listen, who aren't very many of you, but thank you just the same. So the last Guardians roles are starting to fill up, and I'll just jump right into it. I'm ready to name some people. I'm ready to name some names of people that have taken some roles for me. And let's just go down the list. Lucas, the main character, is not quite filled yet. I'm waiting on one particular individual to get his auditions in, if he can figure out his microphone situation. But Harnan, the very next character, the second most scenes in the book, has gone to a podcasting favorite. That would be Murder at Avedon Hill's own P.G. Holyfield. I really like P.G.'s voice for this role. He kind of has that gravelly tone and maturity, I think, that most voice actors you get auditioning are a little too clear, I think, you know, a little too young sounding, possibly. I would use my own voice, but I'm trying to avoid doing any major character voices myself so as to differentiate the character from the narrator, because I plan on doing all the narration parts. The role of Lena has been taken on by a wonderful female actor, or shall we say actress, Jenny Williamson, who applied via the Voice Actors Alliance board. She has taken the role of Lena. She sounds very, very good and pretty much perfect for the role, honestly. The role of Brenner is still up in the air, though I just today got a really nice audition from a gentleman who lives in England, jolly old England, and his voice is extremely good, very experienced in stage acting, and also has done some audio drama work, so that is good. The role of Gildan has gone to Jim Ryan, the host of The Great Debate, the RPG podcast featuring player characters arguing with one another about role-playing game topics. If you go to otherdoc.libsyn.com, that is otherdoc.libsyn.com, you will find The Great Debate, and it's really, really entertaining. Very, very well done, very humorous, and lots of episodes. So Jim just keeps them going. The writing just keeps coming, and of course it's wonderful to have another Jim on board The Last Guardians. The role of Alathros, the principal antagonist, he is filled by the wonderful, the indomitable, the bearded one himself, T. Morris. That's right. Birdhouse Rules' own T. Morris, author of All of Twitter, author of Moravi, The Chronicles of Rafe and Ascana, and Billaba Batting's The Case of the Singing Sword and The Case of the Pitcher's Pendant. Yes, that T. Morris. So wonderful, wonderful to have him on board. I think this role is perfectly suited for him, for his range, and for his beard. The role of Grunin has been taken up by Jeff Ford, who has a very, very solid voice, very clean audio as well, which I like very much. The role of Kyria is still open. I've gotten a few auditions for this, none that really nail it just yet. I'm giving May Breakall out there some time to get over her migraine so she can send in an audition. Now, I'm not really in any hurry yet, but I'm excited and looking forward to getting May's audition in. I suspect she might be perfect for it, but we'll see. The role of Eris has been filled by Silas Carter, who you may remember from Codename Starkeeper as Caria Doran, the love interest for Morgan Stark. The role of Vulif has recently been filled, and I really need to update the casting call on the board. But the role of Vulif has been filled by Eric Ulp, and also taking the role of Malorin because he, you know, changes his voice pretty well. So he is two people in this production, but Eric Ulp is Vulif, which was kind of difficult to get anybody to audition for that. Kind of like pulling teeth. The role of Ordell is still up in the air. I still have options as far as that's concerned. Not entirely sure who I want to use for that, but, you know, still up in the air. Let's see. The role of Kagan has been filled along with the story so far narration. I'm sorry, I keep kicking my microphone. I got rid of my shock mount because my windscreen wouldn't fit all the way on the mic, so I was trying it this way without the shock mount. The role of Kagan and story so far narration. Now, I decided to go a different direction than most people. Most people usually give their story so far bits to guest voices. I wanted to have the same voice bringing it all, kind of tying it all together. And the beautiful thing about this is the character of Kagan, it's almost like this, it puts an interesting twist on the book, almost being from his perspective, being as though he were telling the story or introducing the story every week, because Kagan is a gypsy storyteller in the novel, so it sort of kind of fits together. And the other great connection is this gentleman who is filling the role of Kagan is the male half of the hosting team for the Celtic Myth Pod Show. His name is Gary Colcombe, and he is a native Irishman. He has the accent still, and the best part about his voice, well, not only does he has a deep, rich baritone, but he also has very, very good recordings, and that is almost the most important thing. Now, you have to be able to act. This guy, you know, he and his wife, I think it's his wife, anyway, they give voice to the characters in the stories, and so he's fairly experienced as far as acting goes. Now, the role of Velamine, the strange Kaliach, who lives in the hills, along with the role of, what's her name, Mother Tyree, she's a valet at the castle, the mythic, large, elvish Rohan castle thingy. Yeah. Philippa Jane Ballantyne, New Zealand's pride of New Zealand, winner of the, what was that award? The Sir Julius Vogel Award in New Zealand. That is the equivalent of the Hugo here in the States and other parts, East, being Europe. The role of Malorin, of course, as I said, Eric Ulp has filled that. So, basically, still have plenty of roles open. Now, if you go to the casting call, like I said before, you will see some ancillary roles, small roles. You know, you'll see Ordal and Brarag and Kellyan, Wels, Cleeton, Garen, Vannon, Denigan, Girin, Mulfrin, Marin. Lots of N's. It's very funny. But there are other roles, too. There are other smaller roles. So if you send in an audition, I will have your voice and I will know what you sound like. So then I will probably be able to give you something small. You know, the major roles, obviously, are the major roles. And once you get to, you have Gildan down there with 23 scenes. The main character has 40. Lathros, 18. Grunin, 17. Kyria, 14. And then it drops off from there. Eris with 9. Volaif with 8. Ordal with 6. Brarag with 5. Kagan, 3. Velamine, 3. And so from then on down. So not a whole lot of scenes. So honestly, once those main characters are filled, there's sort of, you know, remaining time for guest voices. And of course, there are people like Chris Lester and Dan Sawyer and other folks I'd like to enlist to have guest appearances. They're also very, very small roles later. You know, one scene where I need two lines from a guide at a castle or a guard at a castle or something, you know, very small. So I will be looking for voices then. If you follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/IndianaJim, I will usually be putting those shout-outs for voices, you know, very small ancillary voices, and usually someone like Jonathan Geisel or T.R. Reed will fill one in for me, or Kevin Crosby, some of these people out there that are friends of mine. You know who you are because I just called you out by name. A lot of these people will fill in smaller roles, and some of my character actors who I've already enlisted will hopefully help me out with various small voices. Anyway, enough about The Last Guardians. Things are going swimmingly. Most of the roles that I've already sent out, the lines I've already sent out, are deadline January 1st. So I've got to get lines to P.G. Holyfield and Eric Ulp and some of these other people soon. So anyway, that's enough of The Last Guardians. Right now, let's go to the slice of sci-fi headlines. Michael Bay will direct Transformers 3. After expressing a desire to possibly step away from the franchise after two successful installments, director Michael Bay is returning to the universe of robot-on-robot action. The director confirmed in his blog that he is returning to helm Transformers 3 and that the opening date will be the summer of 2011. Bay also said that actress Megan Fox will return as well. Fox made some comments about working with the director this summer, comparing Bay to Napoleon. Now, Michael Bay wrote this very clever and entertaining disclaimer on his website, quote, "I promise no alien robots will harm you in any way during the production of this motion picture. Please consult your physician when working under my direction because some side effects can occur, such as mild dizziness, intense nausea, suicidal tendencies, depression, minor chest hair growth, random internal hemorrhaging, and inability to sleep. As some directors may be hazardous to your health, please consult your doctor to determine if this is right for you." And really, that should be the disclaimer for most of Michael Bay's movies as a viewer, right? Yeah, pretty intense stuff. Let's see, Star Trek is the highest moneymaker for the series. This summer's reboot of Star Trek was a huge success both critically and with fans, but it was also a big success where it counts most with Hollywood studios at the box office. The film, when adjusted for inflation, is the highest grossing entry in the long history of the franchise, according to Trek Movie. The site crunched the numbers and found that Star Trek had the highest box office take of any movie in the series. The final tally as of last Thursday brings the film to a few thousand short of $385 million worldwide. Certainly a big success, especially for a franchise that was given up for dead by some just a few years ago, Trek Movie reports. According to Box Office Mojo, Star Trek's domestic tally is $257.7 million over the 147-day theatrical run. This includes $28 million for IMAX, around 11%. This makes it the highest grossing and highest attended film in the Trek franchise. The film is currently the 47th top money earner of all time. The movie will hit DVD and Blu-ray in November. Now, I'm sort of waiting. I've got some Trek feedback, but I really need to rewatch the movie when I have some time. I'm not sure when that's going to be. I know Michael Spence and Mr. Gadgets both sent in feedback on the picture, and I just haven't gotten around to doing it again because obviously I had the review episodes and then I had the a feedback episode then, and then Mr. Gadget sending something really long that deserves its own episode. So I'm sort of waiting for some kind of tie-in, like an anniversary or something, to release a good Star Trek episode for you people. George Lucas doesn't care where you watch his movies, whether it be in your home theater or on your iPhone. His biggest concern is that you're watching him. At least that's what the Star Wars creator said when he was asked about people watching movies on an iPhone or other mobile devices. He was asked if he's comfortable with people watching his movies on the iPhone. His response was, absolutely. He doesn't particularly care about how you watch a movie. but the best experience is still the movie theater. So, does this mean he'll be re-releasing the Star Wars movies to iPhone and iTunes anytime soon? No word on that yet. But of course, as with anything George Lucas, it usually takes a while. Now, to tie in with my major topic, which is later, for making excuses for bad ratings for sci-fi shows, a couple headlines here. Are the networks scared of genre shows? That could be the case, as ratings tank for some series like Dollhouse and Heroes, and other shows are shrouded in other categories to avoid the dreaded label being lost and flash forward. With the news that NBC has cut its order for day one before an episode airs, and that ABC is splitting the season of V, the question has begun to be asked by media observers and fans alike. Entertainment Weekly reports that some people associated with V are saying that ABC has issued a mandate that the visitors in the upcoming series not be referred to as aliens in order to avoid the sci-fi label. This despite the fact that they arrive in spaceships. ABC has denied the rumor, but we'll have to wait and see. Not everyone is convinced the big four nets should run scared from the sci-fi biz. Quote, there's not going to be a sci-fi show that pulls in 20 million viewers, cautions Sherry Ann Brill, a senior VP in charge of programming and audience analysis at media buying firm Carrot. Not the vegetable, but like the diamond. But I absolutely think there is a place for them. If there's good mythology and good storytelling, it can be done. That's right. What are the most popular sci-fi movie series in history? Star Wars. What's the most popular and longest-running genre TV show in history? Star Trek. What did these things do right that current television installments are doing wrong? My personal opinion? I think they're watering down the story. Too many characters, too many subplots, and too much weird stuff going on. I think TV shows these days need to center on a strong mythological theme, a strong moral center. I think that's crucial because, you know, sci-fi and fantasy mythology doesn't work unless there's a strong moral center, because that's what these tales are designed to do. They are like Aesop's fables, in my opinion. That's how I look at it. And here's another story. The NFL is hurting network ratings. First was SGU, bleeding away viewers from Dollhouse on Friday. Now it's the NFL taking away viewers from three of the four big networks Monday evening. The Monday night contest between the Green Bay Packers and the Minnesota Vikings scored the largest ratings for a cable broadcast Monday evening, with over 20 million viewers tuning into the game on ESPN. That darn Brett Favre! Right? Right. I love Brett Favre. Those viewers were lured away from network fare on CBS, NBC, and Fox. For good measure, football is better. It's the best reality TV on TV. Only ABC saw slight gains in viewership for its Dancing with the Stars and, in good news for Nathan Fillion fans, Castle. That's because Castle is a darn good show, period. The viewership drop hurt Heroes most, where it was off 8% as compared to last week. For those of you keeping track at home, that means this episode was the lowest rated episode in the 4-year history of the show. The low ratings for Heroes also hurt NBC's Trauma. Trauma sucks. Okay, let me just get that out of here. Okay, look. They show one scene with the helicopter pilot, lands the helicopter and gets out, and the guy runs up to him and says, are the police coming? And the guy says, I don't know. Do we need them? Whatever. Who in their right mind asks the paramedics if the police are coming? You call the police and say, are you coming? Don't ask the ambulance life flight pilot if the police are coming. What kind of stupidity is that? Everything's over the top, it's outlandish, and it's a special effects fair, okay? That's all it is, and it's going to be canceled. I guarantee you Trauma is going to be canceled because it sucks, not because other shows are getting in the way. Meanwhile, CBS's Monday comedy lineup was off by 5 to 15% over its 2-hour run. And the news is still good for The Big Bang Theory. The show continues to thrive in its new time slot, building on the viewers from Two and a Half Men. Two and a Half Men is awesome, okay? It's one of the best comedies I have ever seen, ever. So let me just say that. Look, and this leads into my point after the break, after we get to a promo. Sci-fi TV shows, they suffer when they're bad. Look at the run of Star Trek. The original series was only 2 seasons, but look at The Next Generation, how long it lasted. Look at Deep Space Nine, how long it lasted. Look at Voyager, how long it lasted. Okay. Shows can get it done. Now, can they get it done on network? I don't know. But Star Trek lasted on, what was it, NBC or CBS? They can do it if it's done well. They've simply got to not lose their way. Okay, and that's where the problem is. The problem is in the writing of the shows. Nothing robs genre TV of its ratings, except itself. Okay? Shows get their ratings when they're good. When they're not good, they don't get ratings. When they're good, they are the reason other shows time slot around them. Okay? If a show's not good enough, a show's not good enough. If it's not mainstream enough, it's not mainstream enough. Don't hold it against the mainstream audience. But I'm going to talk a little bit more about that when we get to it. But first, let me say this. The NFL is king. Nothing beats the NFL. I don't care what show it is. Any show loses to the National Football League, especially when Brett Favre comes back to face the Packers. That's simple. Okay? We will be back after this.
You've slaved for months getting the words just right, fighting off needy children and even needier bosses. With a huge sigh of relief, you type those two special words, the end. Finally, you'll be able to get a good night's sleep. Or will you? Now that the book is done, what's next? Who should you send it to? What do these submission guidelines mean? That good night's sleep is looking more unlikely by the minute. If this is your nightmare, you need Get Published. I'm its host, Mike Plested. Get Published will help you to find the answers to these questions and more. Visit www.michellplested.com to enroll for the podcast that might just help you get published.
Do you have Celtic roots? Are your ancestors from Ireland or Scotland or Wales? From Cornwall, Brittany, the Isle of Man or Gaul? Do you love stories and tales? Ancient myths, legends and folklore of the Celtic peoples? Do you want to hear more about King Arthur, Gwydion, Taliesin, Cuchulain, wild magic and the realms of the Otherworld? Do you want to hear about the old gods, druids and fairies in a way that they're not just dusty, dry words on a page? Then you need the Celtic Myth Pod Show, available from CelticMythPodShow.com. This podcast brings the magic of sound back into our legends. A new episode comes out twice a month and builds into a complete collection of tales from Celtic mythology. So just sit down, get comfortable, and join us every other week. Listen to news, chat, and a story from Celtic mythology with the Celtic Myth Pod Show from CelticMythPodShow.com. That's CelticMythPodShow.com.
I was originally going to make this next segment a part of the slice of sci-fi headlines from the last show, but I just didn't have time to fit it in, so I'm putting it in here. I just decided that these headlines were far too useful for the topic that I wanted to discuss, which was geeks and the shows we love and our desire not to see them canceled, or better yet, to what can we attribute bad ratings? And what do we do when the ratings for these shows are bad? And the first headline that I want to point out is in regard to Terminator, the Sarah Connor Chronicles. Fans push for more Sarah Connor. As the second season of Terminator, the Sarah Connor Chronicles debuts on DVD and Blu-ray this week, a group of passionate fans want to see more of the show at some point in the future. A group of fans has created a mobile billboard for the show that can be seen on the streets of Los Angeles for the months of September and October. The mobile billboard implores for more Sarah Connor, includes a website link to find out more on the show. Fans are hopeful the series could return in a DVD movie if sales of the season 2 set are high enough. Now, I haven't seen a lick of the Sarah Connor Chronicles. I don't want to, okay? I've seen Terminator 2. I haven't seen Terminator 3, and I didn't really want to. I haven't seen the new Terminator movie, though I would love to. I recently saw Terminator 2, so this kind of, it was on TV, so this kind of brings it back for me. I'm not sure where in the timeline the Sarah Connor Chronicles takes place. As I recall, Sarah Connor was in a mental institution while John Connor was in foster care in Terminator 2. I don't know when this is supposed to take place. Does it take place after Terminator 2, before Terminator 2? I'm not sure. I'm guessing after, because Sarah Connor was out of John Connor's life for a while, unless, of course, they retconned the thing, which that's possible. So somebody tell me, please, what they did. But TV shows made off of movies are typically not as good. And I know we geeks strive or thrive or what do we do? We crave. That's a VE word. We crave stuff that appeals to our sci-fi leanings, our fantasy leanings. We want Summer Glau to be on TV because we love her from Firefly, okay? But really, is it that good a show? We fall in love with this stuff that we see, and it satisfies that need that we have for science fiction, but is it really that good? Can we objectively look at it? I don't know. So I'd like to promote a discussion. Someone get in touch with me and tell me what you think about this. Ratings for Heroes aren't good. The good news is we could be getting Chuck back sooner rather than later. That's bad news for Heroes, which saw record-level low ratings for its two-hour season premiere Monday evening. Monday's episode pulled in 6.1 million viewers and a 2.8 rating in adults 18 to 49 for its two-hour premiere. The ratings are down almost 40% from the season premiere last year and some of the lowest the series has received. Now, a 2.8 share, 18 to 49. If that's not good, then the news on Dollhouse is even worse. But here's the thing about Heroes. I've seen commentary where people complain that they lost sight of the storyline back in season two, was it? Or season at the end of season one or the end of season two? I'm not sure. Personally, I never could get into Heroes. I think there were some characters, obviously, that were more interesting than others. They've added more villains, and I personally just, I'm not interested in it because there was just too much going on, I think, and it seemed to lack a cohesive plot. It's like a typical TV series where the writers just go off on tangents. They have really no, to me, they don't seem to have an idea of where they're going, and I think you need to get that across to people very early on. I think the whole thing with the nuclear blast and going forward in time, and then it just, you know, it got a little convoluted, I think. And I think that's the problem that leads to the bad ratings. And I think I have a grasp on what the common viewer sees because I see so many different things. I don't watch them all, but obviously my wife is into certain shows I don't necessarily like, but I at least see how their plots go. I see what resonates with her. I see what resonates with other people. I see what resonates as a popular show out there. Law and Order has been going on for a decade. I see certain elements of that show that are easy to follow. You know, Psych, Desperate Housewives, even. God forbid. One Tree Hill. Okay, I know, teenage soap opera, but still, there are certain elements that keep you in the show, and sci-fi by and large seems to lose the greater scheme of things or the greater plot or the central theme of what you're looking for here. Battlestar Galactica was a short-lived series, and even that lost its way a little bit in the middle of the run. So really, I'm not surprised that Heroes is experiencing bad ratings, because it might be a good show and it might have those things that us sci-fi fans, again, are looking for, that please us, that satisfy something within us. But it might not be that good a show as far as TV is concerned, as far as keeping the average mainstream viewer engaged. The problem with that is whatever you have that keeps the average mainstream viewer engaged doesn't necessarily keep the geek engaged, okay? Look at Star Trek: The Next Generation. It is probably the best example, most recent example of a long-term series that satisfied a lot of our geek mentalities and yet still appealed to a lot of mainstream viewers. What was it about Star Trek that appealed to the mainstream viewer enough to keep it on the air? What is it about Heroes that doesn't? That's what I want to know from you people that watch it. Not for me, because I don't know. And here we go. Dollhouse ratings low. If you're a fan of Joss Whedon's Dollhouse, you may want to enjoy the second season while you can. It may not be around for long. ratings for the season premiere, and get this, the season premiere, season two premiere, ratings were lowest in the series' short history. The half-hour numbers for Dollhouse among adults 18 to 49 and 18 to 34, according to TV by the numbers, 9 to 9:30 p.m. got a one share, 2.6 million. 9:30 to 10 got a one share, 2.427 million. Now, if you compare that to Heroes numbers, they got 2.8 million, or a 2.8 share, I'm sorry, 6.1 million viewers, 2.8 share. Dollhouse got 2.698 million viewers. The half hour numbers. The second half hour had less viewers than the first half hour, which means people are watching the first half hour and turning it over. Several ratings websites use phrases like barely registered with viewers and lowest rated show on a major broadcast network to describe its premiere. And the competition will get more interesting this Friday when Sci-Fi debuts its new genre series, Stargate Universe. Stargate Universe looks outstanding, and I think a lot of geeks are going to be moving over to that, because Dollhouse, while it's Joss, while it's interesting, doesn't satisfy the sci-fi need that we have. And, you know, I've watched a little Dollhouse, and again, I think Joss suffers from some of the same things we do, and it could be Fox. I don't know. I don't know. Are they running series? Are they running shows out of sequence again? I don't know. I don't watch the show just because I couldn't get into it. It doesn't have spaceships. I like Firefly. I want spaceships. Give me space and blasters and Jane saying goofy stuff. Okay, and I don't think Dollhouse does that. As I said earlier, we want shows that satisfy those things that we as geeks gravitate toward. You know, spaceships and supernatural and fantasy and superheroes and those kinds of things. The problem is mainstream audiences typically don't find the things that resonate with them. And one of the problems that I think we need to understand is that to me, science fiction and fantasy is a mostly literary thing. I think it's best gotten across literally, in books and things. Comic books are a different sort of deal with superheroes, and that's where superheroes originated, was in comic books. And of course, films like Superman, Batman, those kind of things, they resonate with mainstream audiences. The problem, as I see it, I think, are with ensemble pieces like Firefly, like Heroes, and like Dollhouse. There's a lot of characters to be following along with. And I think mainstream audiences will gravitate toward ensemble pieces as long as they identify with the characters. And I think it's difficult for people who aren't accustomed to science fiction and some of these outlandish things, it's difficult for mainstream audiences to identify. And so when you have something like Superman, everybody can identify with Superman. He's one superhero with a bunch of regular human beings. You can identify with Batman. He's one specially trained billionaire around a bunch of regular people. And look at James Bond. He's easy to follow. He's one specially trained secret agent with a bunch of regular people. Of course, there comes the supervillain and the super minx villain in those stories. And we look at the low ratings of Firefly and we say, Fox ran the series out of order, which I agree with, because my wife is probably a picture of mainstream audiences, but she's learned to enjoy some of the sci-fi-ish things that I enjoy. She liked Firefly, and I think the biggest piece that helped that was the pilot. The pilot is crucial to getting on board with all the characters, understanding their motivations and where they're coming from. That is a problem that you can lay directly at the feet of Fox. Running shows out of sequence, not allowing people to get into the characters. It wasn't a fit for what Fox wanted to do. And one of the things that Joss said in the documentary I watched is that Fox wanted to, it was in the period where they were fast into the action, right in the middle of things. And so they developed the train robbery episode. Now, the way Firefly episodes appear in the DVD set is perfect. It all happens in the appropriate sequence. And Joss, I think, had a real handle on the story he was trying to tell and how different things are revealed in different episodes and how they lead to the next thing, to the next thing, to the next thing. The issue, I think, from what I gather, now, of course, not being a regular watcher of Heroes and not being a regular watcher of Dollhouse, I don't know how the storyline for Dollhouse has been running, but I do know people were complaining a lot about how Heroes kind of lost its way with the story. As I mentioned before, Battlestar Galactica tended to kind of lost its way with the story and then got back onto it towards the end. So, you know, we as geeks complain and we say, this is the commentary that I noted, and specifically related to Dollhouse. One of the comments was, so what are the Hulu, TiVo, and iTunes numbers? If Fox doesn't take these into account, then they are blatant idiots. Oh, wait, that's right, Firefly. I forgot. Carry on. And so the blame immediately goes to Fox, because that's what we do with a Joss show. We have to go to Fox because Fox screwed up Firefly. But first of all, the most important part of television is what puts people in their seats during the show. Watching it on Hulu is nice, but Hulu has its advertisers, and the network has its advertisers. Hulu has to please theirs, the network has to please theirs, okay? It's not a zero-sum game here. If they don't take those into account, why should they? They have to take into account what happens when people are in the seats for their advertisers during that time slot. They charge a certain amount for advertisers to advertise during the show. If people aren't in their seats watching the show at that time, now the DVR number's a little different, but you can't really take those into account unless you have the journaling rating system. But I think overall, you know, your share is your share. And that's really, really bad. It's not just slightly low. And you can't say the majority of the Dollhouse viewers are viewing it on Hulu or DVR or iTunes. The next comment I saw, so I'm thinking that no one's thinking that people may be flying BT Airlines, which is BitTorrent, or VCRing or other means of time shifting. Again, time shifting doesn't really count towards ratings. It should in a perfect world, but I don't think it's trackable. I don't think that DVR or TiVo count towards the ratings, and I think it's such a minute chunk, probably, that most people who watch a TV show sit down and watch a TV show when it airs. I don't think most people, because we're geeks, obviously, we're individuals, we're outcasts, we're different, we love technology, and we utilize technology, but most people don't. And my comment was, quit making excuses for Joss's low ratings. He's the guy that went with Fox yet again, so I turned some blame on Fox. Maybe he should pitch it to a cable network. Heck, if Sci-Fi or USA had Firefly, it would probably still be on. And I think that's true. I don't know that they would pay Joss as much, and that's probably the issue. They don't exactly have the best time slot. DC says, well, Jim, Joss has a long history with Fox. Even before Firefly, Fox produced both Buffy and Angel, even if they were aired on CW and later UPN for the last two seasons of Buffy. Fox also produced the original Buffy the Vampire Slayer movie, so there must be something that keeps him coming back to them. Yeah, and I think this comes down to the money thing. I think Fox is probably willing to shell out more for the projects than another network. And here's a different one from Wonder Jen, who says, I'm also, Eliza's contract was with Fox. That's kind of how the show idea started. She needed a new vehicle, and she wanted something different to bring to Fox. She invited Joss to lunch, and the rest is Dollhouse. He didn't have a lot of options of shopping it around to other networks. Also, Fox is considering the time-shifted numbers and online viewings. It's a part of the reason the show got a second season to begin with. That, and Joss's earnings potential on peripherals like DVD sales and merchandising, which we have seen very little of to date. Yeah, it's hard to go with how much merchandising value Joss brings to the table if they're not taking advantage of it. Again, you bring up Eliza's contract with Fox. Yeah, that's cool and all. And I guess, is Joss the kind of person just to, oh, someone shows an interest in me, so let me do a TV show? I don't know how much weight I would give to that. I mean, obviously, for him coming to Fox, that's a perfectly legitimate reason to do so. And I think Fox, again, pays a lot of money. But then it gets worse for Joss in the commentary here. This also from Wonder Jen. Who's at home on Friday night watching TV? Not the 18 to 49 demo the advertisers want. It's folks like my parents who are at home watching Ghost Whisperer and Medium. So yes, the ratings for those shows are higher. And she brings up a great point. Friday night, the time slot. You're trying to appeal to the younger crowd, which Buffy and Angel, of course, did. Those shows were really geared toward, you know, the Seventh Heaven, One Tree Hill type kids who wanted a little vampirism. So here's a good comment that I like. So let me get this straight. People choosing not to watch Dollhouse is Fox's fault? Clearly. Joss fans are rabid, but the Serenity movie showed me the loud minority is not, in fact, that large. The show is in a terrible time slot, and it is unlikely Fox will do better with something new. For that reason alone, I think they should stay with Dollhouse. I know I enjoy it, but at the end of the day, if people aren't watching the show live or otherwise, I feel Fox is justified in a cancellation. Another comment? Agreed that this show has gotten boring and predictable. Makes me wish Terminator Sarah Connor Chronicles had made it instead of this. And yes, I've watched every Dollhouse, but only about half have been worth my time. So it seems like even the geek audience might be split on Dollhouse, and that's why the ratings are so low. This is my point. Out of all of this, let's not get caught up in, oh, well, they're not getting Hulu numbers and DVR numbers and blah-da-da-blah-da-da-blah numbers. The only numbers that matter are the live numbers. And the fact is, now Fox might be killing it with the time slot. That could be true. And if they're not willing to move it to a different time slot, then yeah, I'd say they're stupid. I'd say they're stubborn and dumb, and it's Joss's fault for going with Fox. If it had been me, the way that they destroyed Firefly by running it out of sequence, running it opposite what ER, you know, giving it a horrible time slot, not caring a whit about the success of the show, I would never go back to Fox. I don't care who is taking me to lunch. I don't care how much I like her. I don't care how we enjoyed working together on Buffy. I'm not doing it if I'm Joss. And he did it, and he's paying the price. They're giving him a bad time slot, and apparently it's not his best work. So all I'm saying is, as geeks, we need to stop making excuses for why ratings are bad and just look on the face of it. We are not mainstream people, okay? We don't fit in. We are geeks because we did not fit in. Our tastes are different. The things we gravitate toward are different. And just because we have an opinion that a show is great and other people share it, we're still in the minority. And by the ratings being low, it's clear. That's the moral of the story, is stop making excuses for low ratings. Low ratings are low ratings. Well, this show went a lot longer than I anticipated. If you want to hear your voice in the show, you can call the voicemail line at 206-666-2826. And for the other ways to get in touch, here's Dr. John Smarr. Till next time, everybody.
You've been listening to The Adventures of Indiana Jim, a production of Visionary Creative Works. Visit podcast.indianajim.net and leave comments on the blog. Send in your emails and audio feedback to podcast@indianajim.net. I'm Dr. John Smarr. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.